discussion.
Welcome back to the show floor here at Dot Local London. It's getting busier again. Lunch is over. People are coming back on the show floor. So it's interesting to see all the activity all around us. As you can see, it's been busy most of the day as people nip in and out of sessions and come down to talk to our partners and indeed our MongoDB folk here on the show floor. In the keynote earlier with Zahir, we obviously discussed a lot of things, but one of the things that stood out was streaming. So I am joined by Joe Nimick, who is the Senior Product Manager for streaming here at MongoDB. Joe, welcome to the live stream.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Good, good. So it was mentioned, as I said, in the keynote, it's something that's relatively new for MongoDB. For our audience who aren't familiar with our stream processing, tell us a little bit about what it is and how it helps developers and what are the use cases, Joe?
Sure. So I think the most simple way to think of stream processing is that you're able to take an aggregation framework query that you're used to writing. So if you've been writing aggregation queries in, you know, the Mongo database and running them, now what you can do is you can take that same query and you can run it continuously forever in perpetuity. So instead of running it at an interval, like, you know, maybe if you're like me and you're back in the day, you used to use cron. Maybe people nowadays don't use cron.
Still do.
You know. But, you know, you would run that query in the database every so many minutes or hours or night, you know, every night, something like that. Now what happens is because it's continuously running, as new data shows up at the database or from a system like Apache Kafka where there's an event stream, it's just continuously processing it and outputting the results as they happen.
Okay. And what do we do for longevity there? You know, we're only interested in the new stuff that has been aggregated in the stream processing. What do we do with the historical data? What happens there?
Yeah, so at that point, it's kind of up to you with whatever your business logic is. You might want to materialize that data into an Atlas collection so that you have a constantly materialized view that you can always query and is always up to date, right? I always think of the use case of like that executive that wants his dashboards to always be up to date. He doesn't want it.
We know a few of those.
Yeah, you know, we all have to work with them. And so this gives you the ability for those updates to be constantly applied rather than being applied at an interval. Or you could have sent it to a system that's Kafka compatible, and then you can syndicate that to potentially many other downstream applications that are able to read from Kafka that you might be running.
Okay, so that's the underlying methodology and technology behind it. What's the use case of streaming data? You know, previously, we would have had guests on and we talk about maybe for fraud detection, these sort of things as well. Outline a couple of real-world use cases for me there, Joe, to put it in the context for developers who mightn't be familiar.
Sure. I mean, everyone has a fraud detection use case. Maybe we'll skip that one.
Give me a new one.
Yeah. So, for example, we have some oil well pump manufacturers down in Texas, right?
And what those there's folks, a lot of them there.
There's a lot of them there. And what they're effectively doing is they're monitoring those pumps continuously in real time so that they can detect when there's something starting to go wrong on that equipment, right?
Okay.
And then they're able to not only report continuously what's happening, so they understand their yields that they're getting, but when those yields start to drop off, they know that they can dispatch a maintenance crew to go and do that in a very quick and effective manner.
Okay. So that's one and a very kind of mechanical example. Any others there?
Oh, there's tons of different examples. The energy industry, right? We're all doing the smart grid stuff now.
Yeah.
So they have many different IoT sensors out there that monitor the health of the grid, basically.
Right.
And that stream of data from all of those devices can overwhelm a lot of systems, right? You might not need all of the individual raw data points. And stream processing lets us read that event stream in because it's all in-memory processed.
Sure.
That's real fast and snappy. And what you can do then is you can pre-aggregate that. So you might turn 100,000 events into maybe 100 events then match kind of the query that you want to run in batch. So you persist that then to your collection you reduce the load on the database to run those queries. Those queries now are faster because there's less documents for them to have to scan and go over.
Okay. So in that instance, in the IoT space, this is helping, you know, pick out that anomaly in the myriad of data that gets streamed from these connected devices.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do the needle in the haystack type workload if that's what you're interested in. Yep. you could just pre-aggregate it into a materialized view that you know is kind of what you're after. Some of the more simple things that we see customers start with is typically they've been like Kafka Connect users.
Right.
So Kafka Connect lets you read from Kafka and write it into a Mongo collection, or you can read the change stream from Mongo, write it into your Kafka topic. Right? It's just really a simple integration type capability. But it doesn't allow you to do aggregations, right? It doesn't have a lot of transformation capability to it. So Atlas Stream Processing, you can get started very easily doing a Kafka connector-like use case by just reading from Kafka, writing it to Mongo, or the other way around. But then as you grow, now you have all of those aggregation framework capabilities at your fingertips. And so you can start transforming the data, you can start windowing it and doing aggregations over periods of time, and really building in more business logic to that transfer.
And how do people get started with this now? Where do we go? Where do we learn? The docs, obviously, et cetera, et cetera.
The docs are probably, the simplest place. Obviously, there's a
developer center.
Developer center, yes. The developer center does have quite a number of tutorials available that you can go look at there. Or you can just hop into Atlas, and right on the left, you'll find under data services, stream processing.
Okay.
You can go ahead and get started. You can create an instance very easily.
Right.
You know, you don't get charged for creating an instance.
Okay.
You only get charged when you're running processors. So if you want to play with it just a little bit and then stop your processor, you're not going to continuously be charged.
And do you need to be familiar with aggregation pipelines before doing this, or does it matter? You go in, if you've never done an aggregation pipeline on MongoDB before, can you just start with stream processing?
There is a tutorial in the documentation for a quick start. So if you're unfamiliar with ag, right, and kind of some of the other nuances that come with stream processing, we can just follow the getting started tutorial. It's linked right there. If you go into the Atlas UI, it's one of the three options that'll take you directly out to the tutorial and you can read about how to get started.
Perfect. Well, that makes it super simple. So in terms of stream processing, what was new that was announced today, or what's new out now or recently?
So
new regions, et cetera, as well, too?
Absolutely. Yeah. When we GA'd back in May, we only had one region.
Well, fair enough.
Right?
So, that's good, right? We have more regions. Tell us where are those? Or
absolutely. Well, we added 10 more regions. So we're at 11 now in AWS, and they're across all the major zones.
Okay.
So you can spin up an APAC if you're interested in Europe. You know, if you have GDPR concerns, you're able to easily run stream processing there now. And then in the Americas as well.
Okay. And I saw VPC support as well, too. Tell us a little bit why that's important for developers.
Yeah. So, in many production use cases, folks don't want to connect to their Kafka clusters over public IPs.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. I totally get it, right? That's the way of the world. So, what VPC peering lets us do is now you can peer your Atlas Stream Processing instance to wherever you're running your Kafka cluster. And that allows us to have private networking capabilities and keeps you off of the public internet.
Okay,
and
which is important for many industries, right? Yeah, you don't want to be on the public internet for a lot of that.
Yep. And somebody out there will ask, well, what about private link? Our private link is coming soon. It's next on the list of support for private networking capabilities.
Yeah, you heard it here first. expanded Terraform support.
Yep. So now you can use Terraform operators for every part of a stream processing workload.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create instances, which are just like when you deploy a MongoDB cluster, you have SP10, SP30, SP50 type instances. You can create the connections, which let you connect to Atlas clusters or to Kafka clusters. And now the big change is we've added support in Terraform for stream processors themselves. So now you can deploy and manage your stream processors with Terraform, giving you the ability to do everything in your production environment via Terraform.
Excellent. You mentioned Kafka earlier. We got some expanded Kafka capabilities as well, too, with the new announcements.
Yep. So we've added support in Kafka for things called Kafka keys and Kafka headers.
Okay.
So now, Kafka kind of has three pieces to it. It has headers, keys, and values.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people use values as the predominant way to transfer data, but there are other use cases where keys and headers are really important for customers and their use cases. And so we've exposed those in stream processing for years.
Excellent. Well, it sounds as if the stream processing team have been pretty busy, Joe. So it's great to hear about all these advances. I always learn a lot when I do these interviews. So I've learned a couple of new things. Joe, thank you very much for explaining all the new stuff in Atlas Stream Processing. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
Take care. We'll be back shortly again with some more guests, this time back in the Gen AI space, talking about vector search.